Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
One one was a race cross, 2-2-1 was 1-2. 1-1-1-1 race, 2-2-1-1-2. This is episode 222.
2 for 22.
That's good. Very, very good. We're doing another Zoom recording today just because there's some sniffles around, so we're just kind of trying to not see too many people.
That's right. Kids bringing things home from daycare and school. Hooray.
Colds continue regardless of whatever else is there, so it's looking like it's just that, but always got to be careful.
Yeah, and it just gives you a good chance to do a bit of catch-up and some watching.
Oh, yeah.
When other people are sick and you're not, you put them to bed crack on.
Yeah, that's really nice. I love the sound of that. I've got a quiz that I kind of base it off a BuzzFeed quiz. Not a quiz, just like one of those lists that I saw a few days ago and I was like, oh, that's good, and then immediately forgot it and then started doing another one and went, no. I'm going to go back to that original idea. So I've got that for you. It's a bit of fun. It's more, they based it more for Americans. So I've kind of given us a bit of an Aussie twist because it'd be too
made
Aussie.
It a bit more True Blue.
Oh, yeah, mate. True.
Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville latest newsletter. This week's edition is brought to you by frozen sliced bread. Better than actual sliced bread. In the northern woods on the border of Watchersville and Frieslander, the bears and wolves have been teaming up together. The local hermits, they don't live together, but together they collectively, but separately, live in the same woods. So like they are at the same place at the same time, but are not together, yeah? Anyway, they've spotted what looks like a horde of 80 animals all making their way further north. Because they're heading in the direction of our neighbouring county, we don't have to be too worried unless they're popping up there to collect more of their mates, turning around and heading south, then we have a problem. The authorities have started digging trenches and building walls just behind the trenches and hope that that will stop them. And any zombies that come wandering around there. Donald Ferris has announced that he will be stepping down as the head librarian. He's only had the job for a few months now, but has discovered that he hates the public and books. He's off to be a pro gamer and stream online. Good luck, we guess? Also, if you're keen on being head librarian, let the library know. The potato cook-off will still go ahead, despite there being only the brushed variety available. Organisers have apologised, but said that contestants will have to wash the dirt off the spuds themselves. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville. I've got some watching stuff. I have caught up on the Walking Dead for this week, which is good. I feel quite accomplished.
Yeah,
with
me
that.
Too.
And watched a few other things as well that I'm really hoping you've seen as well. So we'll talk about that later on.
You got trailers, right? I got a couple of trailers. There's a few things that I've seen. One of them's a game trailer that I want to talk about.
Okay, then.
But I've also got a bunch of news. Should we crack into the news?
Yeah, let's do the news. If I could go first, the first one I saw today looked pretty cool, and I was like, oh, that's, and then it got a bit convoluted, and now I'm a little bit confused as to exactly whether to be excited or not. But you know how Netflix has got that show called Wednesday coming out, and it's about Wednesday Addams family, right? News was that Christina Ricci, I never know how to pronounce her last name. Anyway, she has been cast in the series, but not as Wednesday. That has already happened, and that is Jenna Ortega,
yes.
Who you know, like she's been in stuff, right?
She's been in stuff.
So Christina plays a new character and not an older version of Wednesday. They were very clear to talk about that. But this is where it gets a bit convoluted and confusing. Thora Birch was supposed to be in this Wednesday series for Netflix. Had to pull out for whatever reason. Christina Ricci took over either that role or they've sort of changed the role a little bit, adapted it so that, because I mean, it's pretty obvious that we all know that she was Wednesday, right? So I think they've kind of done a little bit of a twist in that. But she's already been filming She's been filming for weeks, so this news must have leaked, I reckon. And they've been filming somewhere like Romania, something like that. So I'm getting like that kind of gothic, cool, like vampire vibe going on. That's what you need for the Addams, right? The Addams family.
Yeah, sure. So,
sounding cool, but I do like the fact that she's back, but not as Wednesday.
Well, look, that sort of stuff in the Flash TV show, the guy that played the Flash in the 90s show, he's an older version from another universe.
Oh, so he still does play Flash.
Yes, he does, cool. But it's he plays Jay Garrick Flash. There's all sorts of stuff that I can think of where people have done an homage kept that link to the original property and stuff. I like that.
Yeah,
Christina, yeah. I say Christina Ricci.
Ricci, yeah.
No, Ricci? I say Christina Ricci. Ricci. No, I don't know what I say.
No, I don't know either. It's like Cobra and Cobra. Which one do we say?
You know what this means?
What?
We don't talk about her enough.
Yeah, I think you're right.
We should rectify that.
You're so right. I like that.
All right, talking of cool casting stuff, everyone's putting their hand up. Yeah, I'll be Doctor Who. I'll be Doctor Who. I don't know if you saw, but there's some chatter that like just hit before we started recording, and all I got to do was write down the name. Apparently, serious top contender is Hugh Grant.
I saw this too, and the only thing I thought from this, because you're right, I literally just saw it. The only thing I thought was that he's an A-lister, right? So this budget is probably a hefty sum compared to other Doctor Who series that we've had.
This series I've spoken about, Jodie Whittaker's great.
Mm.
I don't like the showrunner and the messaging behind the show, all this sort of stuff. It's not really clicked for me.
Mm.
And that's kind of, I'm not alone in that. So they're bringing back the guy that brought it back, you know, and all this, they're kind of returning to the pomp that it had at first, especially when David Tennant joined.
Yep.
But you, Christopher Eccleston, A-list, at the time, big
of
name
course.
Max.
Yeah. Sort of yeah.
stuff. So it feels like they're kind of going for that vibe. And I saw a few people say stuff like, isn't that a step down for Hugh Grant? I don't know. That's the BBC's biggest budget show.
To play Doctor Who is a pretty massive thing. And, you know,
can you imagine a Dalek? I'm terribly sorry. But I must insist that you do not invade Earth.
I really this energy for this Doctor, if this is the case.
And then you've got to ask yourself, are we going to get early Hugh Grant, foppish, fumbling, a bit bubbling, or do we get the super confident, you know, appearing in Guy Ritchie Hugh Grant that we get these
like
days,
Jones,
where he's a lot more,
kind of,
I'll fucking have you, not bothered by your stuff, mate, or come on through.
I kind of like in my mind, I would like the death to 2020, death to 2021 Hugh Grant.
Sure.
That kind of very confident, but still a bit, a little bit like that. And also there was word that because, you know, the showrunner coming back and they're kind of changing things up, the word I saw was Marvel-esque, as in it's going to have a change of what would you call it? Not a creative change, a style change maybe? Sort of?
Yeah, a tonal reboot.
Yeah, that's it. If there's one show that's very good at rebooting itself and doing whatever it wants, it's Doctor Who.
Yep.
Speaking of excited, did you see CD Projekt Red has confirmed the new Witcher game?
Oh, I did not see that.
It's in development.
We all tossed a coin.
It's in development, and they're kind of partnering with Epic because they'll be using Unreal Engine 5. And what I love is when you see news like this and then you go into the comment section and you're like, right, who's going to be angry about what? And what I saw people were most angry about was they were angry that CG Projekt Red were not going to use their in-house gaming engine and instead go to Unreal 5. And as someone pointed out, they've been using that engine since The Witcher 2. very old engine. Time to move on.
Time to boot.
And Unreal Engine, like that's the
industry standard,
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So
get on board.
Yeah, I'm very much on board with this. We don't know if Geralt's going to be in it because they were kind of saying, oh, this is the last, you know, The Witcher 3. Back then they were like, oh, this is Geralt's final story. Like, spoiler, nothing happened to him. He's still alive. The poster that they put up on their social media said, a new saga begins. And it was like picture of snow, like looking down on the ground of snow. And there was one of those kind of Geralt wolf medallions that he wears around his necklace. So maybe, and his eyes were red. So maybe he is still the main character, or maybe something's happened to him and Ciri has to go and try and find him.
Yeah, maybe he's the bad guy.
Oh, that'd be cool. A bit of a twist.
You live, what is it? Either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yeah, that's exactly it, yeah. So that's exciting news, but don't get too excited because that's obviously years away.
Sure. Well, one that's coming a little bit sooner, if you saw The Batman and you enjoyed that, Paul Dano is going to be writing a Riddler Year One comic series for DC Comics that's starting in October. There have been a couple of these instances lately. We talked about Danny DeVito writing a short story of the Penguin for an anthology.
Yeah.
But this is actual. So DC have a label called Black Label, and they're like an imprint within, and that's MA plus comic books that are written for adults. They're more prestige and normally between 48 and 54 pages an issue rather than 32 or 24, whatever, blah, blah, blah. They're big.
Mm.
And it's pretty cool that the guy that's originated this new take is coming to do the same thing. Now, Year One in DC Comics means that's basically the origin story but expanded. So Batman Year One is when he first comes back to Gotham after traveling the world and learning all the skills and first built the Batsuit, this sort of stuff. So the Riddler Year One is going to be stuff that happened before the film, events of the film. It's set in continuity of the film and kind of how his character came to where the film begins.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Was this – so I haven't seen the film, but the Riddler – was the Riddler – I think you said something about he wore Glad wrap around his head or something –
me. So he's inspired by the Zodiac Killer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
San Francisco in the 60s and 70s, but it's also very Dexter and his costume, rather than being a garish leotard like Jim Carrey wore.
Yeah.
Or in the comics, Riddler is traditionally in a suit.
Yeah,
sharply dressed.
Well, wasn't that the same in the 1960s? Series as well.
Yes, 60s series and the cartoons in the 90s, all this sort of stuff. Riddler has kind of been he's meant to be like the sharp dressed version of Joker, whereas Joker's all about chaos, Riddler is about inflicting order on things and solution. This is a very different take of if someone was a serial killer and they were the only thing they ever wanted to leave were intentional clues, then how would they cover themselves to ensure that they don't leave any evidence behind unless it's what they meant to and stuff? And so, yes, he's constantly wrapping himself in Glad wrap. It's very weird.
You want that weird thing that people who haven't even seen it know. That there's a weird thing about him. It's a weird thing. He does Glad Wrap. It's a strange.
Yeah.
So he'll be appearing with Glad Wrap in the comics then, right? I assume.
Yes. Yes. I imagine, and maybe it's going to be about how he got into that with the S&M gear and all this sort of stuff. But look, keeping it within the DC news stuff, they announced a few new bits of casting for season 3 of Harley Quinn, which is hopefully coming not too long. You know, I love that show.
Yeah.
So season 3 is going to have James Gunn cameo as himself. And he is directing a biopic about Thomas Wayne. So Batman's father. Harvey Guillen from What We Do in the Shadows, Guillermo, is going to be playing Nightwing, which is hilarious because Nightwing is Robin grown up. There's a point where Robin gets sick of Batman's shit and he moves to a different city and becomes Nightwing. And the joke in the comic is that Nightwing has everyone kind of voted yes that Nightwing has the best butt in all of comics, best male butt,
and so
they kind of weirdly, not weirdly, in the same way that every woman in comic books is big, busty, and this sort of stuff, Nightwing's always drawn with the male gaze. You know, so everyone, oh, he's a bit sexy. So yeah, Guimero is that is very, very clever.
That's cool.
And there's also a spin-off in early development of the cartoon series called Noonans.
Which
is Noonans, N-O-O-N-A-N. Noonans is a bar for supervillains that has been on the show as a hangout.
That sounds good.
Yes, and there's Kite Man. There's a lot of scope for a Cheers-style supervillain show. Kite Man will be taking over the bar and running it. Kite Man, of course, has been a major character in both seasons of Harley Quinn, and he was engaged to Poison Ivy throughout the latter half of season two, and then she left him at the altar to run off and with Harley. And
what a cliffhanger!
Do the Thelma and Louise and make out, and you know they're in a relationship now.
So does he wear a kite on his back, or does he Hell have yeah. lots of kites? Okay.
So Kite Man is intentionally a shit character.
Mm.
He's up there with Condiment King, who's a guy that has two tanks on his back and hoses, and one of them shoots ketchup and the other one shoots mustard. But, yeah, Kite Man has a big kite and he steals stuff and then dives out the window. And the running joke in the comic is that Batman's beating someone up down on the ground and you'll see Kite Man high up in the panel and it'll cut to Kite Man. Kite Man will just go, Kite Man. Hell yeah.
He's got nothing to do with anything else. That's great.
Nothing to do with it. Constantly just evading stuff. Anyway, he's pathetic and everyone makes fun of him. So he's perfect. He, what's the guy's name? I think it's Matt O'Kine, something like that. He used to be on Fresh Off the Boat and he's been a bunch of stuff. But it's very cool that he's going to be headlining this show. And I can see them really focusing on some very, very pathetic characters.
They kind of sound like there was a show back in the 80s, an English animated show called Banana Man.
I remember Banana Man.
Yeah, it was by the Goodies, right? So they would have Banana Man, and then I'm pretty sure that one of the evil guys was Apple Man, like he just had an apple-sized head, and there were other it sounds like I don't think that they've been influenced like each other. I just think that they're two different groups of people who have ridiculous ideas about superheroes.
Oh, look, I don't know how the Marvel movies haven't had a bit where Ant-Man meets Spider-Man and goes, hey, you Spider-Man, do you control spiders? And Spider-Man, being the quippy teenager, turns around and goes, what, do you control ants? And Ant-Man goes, oh, yeah. What's your name about?
What's your name about?
If you aren't getting your watches fixed just by listening, follow the watches on Twitter and Instagram.
The Supernatural, that show went for
14 seasons.
It's a long time. Very long 15. Time. People absolutely loved it. Anyway, the CW still loves it. So they're not making the Supernatural again, but instead they're casting a pilot episode for a show called The Winchesters, and it will be about their parents and how they met. I think their mother, Mary, is about 19 in the pilot. So it's very early on, and you'll sort of get that origin story, and I would be very surprised if this wasn't picked up.
Yeah, they've been tinkering with this for a couple of years now because they want to get it really right. They have had various actors play the parents on the show. Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yeah, right.
Is the dad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're not getting him back for the dad role because it's younger version.
Yes.
But they need to get someone who can play a young version of Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
So Drake Roger, who was in the show The In-Between, he'll be playing that character. And
our new less famous Drake.
And Meg Donnelly from American Housewife will be playing Mary. So that's very, very exciting for all CW and Supernatural fans. I mean, that show.
Well, It went for a long time. Do you want some exciting news if you're a fan of CL?
CL.
Yeah, you know, CL, Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, yes, CL, of course, of course.
Everyone's a fan of Christopher Lloyd. How couldn't you be? Especially if you're the casting director of Mandalorian Season 3, because they've added him in there somewhere. Great. I don't know. I'm sure he's – I think he's acting and not doing the voice for a robot or something.
Cool. I wonder if he's going to be in more than one episode, because that's the cool thing about The Mandalorian. You may only see these actors playing a role for one episode, or they may be in one episode and then you'll see them three episodes later again, and I really like that. Please let it be one that – Bryce Dallas Howard is directing.
Oh, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
I think that would be really nice. I only found out recently that Christopher Lloyd's nephew is Sam Lloyd, who played Ted on Scrubs. You know the one that always looks sad?
Yeah, the hangdog. He passed away a few years ago.
But that's big news, and I hope that they do some sort of tiny little reference where he goes to say something like Grey Scott's or something like that, but doesn't actually.
Grogu.
Yeah. I would love that so much. Speaking of loving things, can you believe that it's like 25 years since Buffy the Vampire Slayer was a thing? Well, not really. Actually, it's longer, right? Because the movie came out. Yeah, exactly. So the series itself is 25 years old this year. Anyway, people are talking to Michelle Geller because she's Buffy, and they've asked her who she would like to play Buffy if a potential reboot was to happen. And she's thrown out the name Zendaya. I mean, why wouldn't you? You might as well go for gold, for one of the biggest actresses around at the moment. There's no official announcement of a Buffy reboot, but I mean, I feel like they've been talking about that for a few years now, like maybe 4 or 5 years. I've heard little snippets of maybe the rumor is that. I reckon it could be time.
I was going to cast Buffy. I would cast Bernie Feinstein, who is Jonah Hill's little sister.
I like her. She's very, very good. She would bring such a great energy to that.
Yep. She would be one sassy slayer.
She's very funny. Yeah, that's a good pick.
Who would you go?
That's a hard one. What if we do like the opposite of girl power? And we just cast Tom Holland in it and just make everybody angry. He's got the moves.
Sure.
But the thing about Buffy, I mean, I rewatched maybe half of the first season not long ago. And the action scenes, at least within the first season, are a little bit now, you know, just a little bit. Now, I can imagine they can really tighten that up now, you know, in 2022 because
you'd have to have more quippy friends.
Oh, she would have to be quippy as well, right?
Oh, yeah, because it'd be a darker tone in general, but they'd have to be quippy all the time.
It's going to happen. There's going to be a Buffy reboot. There are some things that are off limits, right? So the Goonies, Princess Bride, I think there's a collective decision within Hollywood to leave those, right? Maybe even, we were talking about him just before, but maybe even Back to the Future is off limits. But I think Buffy is not off limits.
No, you just get it completely away from Joss Whedon and people might have another go. Otherwise, tainted.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and also just a different tone. Like you said, it would have to be darker and that kind of thing. Any other news, or do you want to jump into the trailers?
Oh, look, I got one last news piece and then the trailer. So Godzilla vs. Kong was that came out last year. That was made up in Queensland at Warner Brothers Village Roadshow, whatever the studios are called there. And they filmed a bit at Miami Beach, the high school, and they did a bit at Brisbane and all sorts of stuff around there. Anyway, they announced just yesterday that a sequel is going to be shooting there later this year. Not confirmed who the crew is yet, but Adam Wingard, who directed the last one, he's vocalized several times over the last year how keen he is to come back and do another one.
Cool.
Anna was on the news yesterday. The Queensland Premier was announcing yesterday that there's a boost of $80 million to the economy. It'll create 505 cast and crew jobs and 750 extras for the shoot. The last film they filmed here for 26 weeks.
Yep.
And it's expected to be at least the same this time.
The same, yeah.
Which is great.
That's great. Because that movie, I mean, yes, it came out during a time where there weren't many things coming out, but there was a lot of talk about it, you know.
It was the biggest release of the pandemic up until Spider-Man. So, well, until pandemic was settled more at the tail end of last year and studios got a bit bolder when things were more heated. Yeah, it was the best performer. So very cool. Stoked for more of that. Excited to see where that goes. I know Nathaniel's going to be very excited.
He'll be watching it. I've just had a thought, right? Because I was thinking about films that were made in Queensland during the pandemic. And, of course, then I started thinking about Shang-Chi. And I was like, Awkwafina as Buffy.
That's a good call.
That's my pick. That's who I've picked.
All right. I can see Awkwafina making a great Giles.
Oh yeah, yeah,
being,
yeah, yeah.
Being the snappy over at librarian who's just a touch older,
just a little bit, but still thinks she's cool
but
enough to
secretly,
be with.
Secretly, maybe a 200-year-old Earth Elder or something like that.
She's seen it all before, but she's still annoyingly sassy.
Oh. You kids, never going to. All right, I got three trailers for you.
Awesome.
Strap in, because they're all quite different. Ms. Marvel dropped the first trailer for the series coming June 8th.
How'd
on
it look?
Disney Plus. Really solid. They've completely changed her powers. I'm okay with that, surprisingly. It looks like they're keeping the core of what the character's about, which is about essentially, she Ms. Marvel is a super fan of the Avengers,
yep,
and specifically loves Captain Marvel. She writes fanfic about them, posts online, it does cosplay, all this sort of stuff, and it's that idea of what if you got called up to the big leagues.
Mm.
But she's also got a massive amount of Spider-Man in the mix because her family is very strict Muslim. And so she's sneaking out in New Jersey to go and, you know, fight crime near the local grocery store and protect things that are really low-key.
Mm.
So it starts at that low-key level and how she keeps things hidden from her parents and balance the work life and everything like that. And then, yeah, it just snowballs and escalates till she ends up in the Avengers on the core team
just by
and
accident.
She's still trying to keep it secret from everyone
and this sort
of stuff.
She's been one of the more popular, newer characters in the comics of the recent years,
very much so.
Right?
Of the last 10 years at Marvel, yeah. Miles Morales is the only bigger breakout character.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And so, yeah, we've got Moon Knight coming up at the end of the month, and that's going to be a dark psychological horror thing. And then this is going to be Shay's favorite TV show of the year, I have a feeling.
Well, that's good, right? Because Babysitter's Club is no more. So
that's right. But this is, you know, I think she's meant to be 14 or something in the show. So it's that not an older teenager, a younger teenager stumbling into this life. Looks like great fun. Very here for it. Another one that looks like great fun. Mike Myers has a new sci-fi comedy, 6 episodes for Netflix, coming May 5th. Called the
Pentaveret.
And Pentaveret is something that he's kind of been pushing in his films. Someone found, like, he mentions it back in So I Married an Axe Murderer. It's an alternate term for the Illuminati that he came up for.
Oh, so he's made up this word.
So he's made up an entire Illuminati conspiracy theory show.
Too good.
And he's playing most of the members of it and the people investigating it. And so he's playing something like 8 different characters throughout. It looks like it could be a real return to form after him taking a bit of time off.
A bit of time? A lot of time. I mean, I know he did that weird game show thing.
The Gong Show. But yes, he did that. And he still popped up in a few things.
Yeah.
But he hasn't done any big movies and stuff. Maybe since The Love Guru.
I think it was The Love Guru. Yeah, that's famously they're like, oh, that was when he, I didn't watch it. Did The Love Guru have Justin Timberlake in it?
It was a poor choice all around. Anyway, none of the characters in this that he's portraying appear to be significantly different race to what he could
claim as. Not allowed to do that anymore. No way.
Settle down on that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's May 5th, and that looks like that could be a lot of fun. And then the other one, which I don't know if you saw the trailer for, but it looks like something you could really get into, is there's a new game coming out June 10th called The Quarry.
The Quarry? I haven't heard of this one.
So it is a horror survival game.
Oof.
But in that style of like Quantum Break or essentially they've got like a whole huge list of A-list, not A-list, but like big name actors. The main one being David Arquette.
Yeah.
And you are controlling one of nine, and it changes all the time who, but nine counselors at a summer camp.
Yeah.
The kids have been sent home, but the bus breaks down so the counselors can't get back to town. And you've got to help them survive through one night.
This has got such a great poster. Like, the poster is those early 80s horror.
It's a controllable Halloween, Friday the 13th. You know, it's Jason. Mm. But the trailer intentionally makes it really obscure as to, and kind of no spoilers, but makes it feel kind of Cabin in the Woods-ish in that it's got cannibal hillbillies, but it's also got a hint of aliens. It's got a hint of supernatural, but it's also got a hint of slasher killers. I think it's going to be choose your own adventure of how do you kill all these kids?
Well, I mean, it's from the creators of Until Dawn, so you already got those horror elements in there. Oh, a choose your own adventure. Yes. I mean, this is frightening. I'm already scared of it, but I might give it a go.
But it looks like a hell of a lot of fun. And it's got, as I said, it's got David Arquette being very meta and knowing and, you know, leaning into his new elder statesman of horror status.
Yeah, why not? Why not lean into that? That's a title. I see Ariel Winter from Modern Family is in it as well. We were only talking about her last week. Yeah,
Smith is in there. It's a good list of kids.
Very good. So is this single player? It looks there will be multiplayer. Yes. I'm reading this from NME.com. There will be multiplayer, and the game mode will support up to 7 friends online or local co-op. That sounds cool. So you can have your friends around.
That does sound cool, but I don't want to play that with anyone because I don't want their choices to impact my gameplay.
Yeah, fair enough. Yep, I'm totally with you on that.
There's something like 200 plus different
endings.
Not endings, ways that things can go horribly wrong for characters.
The Quarry. That sounds awesome. I'm very disappointed that I missed any of that. So that's good. I might watch
it. You can check that out afterwards, but I'm going to cheer you up with a great big fun fact.
Hey!
So because Godzilla vs. Kong 2 is happening, whatever that ends up getting called, I thought, we'll just have a bit of a look-see. I already told you a few places it was filmed. That one was the 36th film in the Godzilla saga and the 12th film in the King Kong saga.
That's a lot. Big difference, though. I mean,
it is a big difference.
36 versus 12 is a lot.
And this is that film is the first reference to King Kong in the legendary MonsterVerse series. Up to now, he's exclusively been referred to as Kong.
Yeah, okay.
But the film has a few moments, one where he picks up an axe and he's clearly taking over his family's lineage, and then the end of the film with him sitting on a a large chair that looks quite thronish. It's the first allusion to him being King Kong of Hollow Earth.
Yeah, that's cool.
Director Adam Wingard thought of Godzilla as the Undertaker, from the pro wrestling character, fearsome loner.
Yeah, right.
Who comes and goes to take on enemies when he needs to. He's just a force of nature. You don't know anything more about him. You don't learn his internal thoughts or what's driving and motivating him. He's just there to do a job.
Yeah.
Whereas for Kong, he looked at Bruce Willis's John McClane, even giving the big guy a dangerous jump. That's a diehard homage in the film. And it's very, when you know that, it's like, oh man, that really is.
Yeah,
very John McClane. Yeah.
That's worth a rewatch, really, just to see that.
Yeah, and it does hold up through there because Kong is just exasperated and wants to be left alone. He doesn't want to fight Godzilla.
Yeah.
But Godzilla's a dick. And he's saying, yo, I'm in charge.
The fighting.
He's king of the monsters. And if you think you're going to take his title, he's going to come and kick your ass.
Yeah, there is real sort of wrestling storylines there, I can see. Yeah. It makes sense.
You guess some fun fact about production coming to Queensland. Get excited, everybody up there. It's about to get rawsome again.
Try and get a job. If anything, just be an extra. That'd be good fun.
It will be good fun. I have good look up for a bird's eye shot and fear.
Yeah. I know that I was the only one that could see that, but I really needed you to do it.
That's okay. Anyone wondering, I did the face from Birdemic 2.
Very specific.
They know that.
Very specific.
Oh, my God. Yep.
It was very enjoyable. Speaking of enjoyable, let's get into some watching suggestions.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
Tom, have you watched any of Our Flag Means Death?
No, not yet. I know I should have. I've already got a few episodes banked.
It's good.
Hit me with it.
There's like 8 episodes now, so it's good.
Okay.
This is the one from Taika Waititi, pirate movie, pirate show, which is, you know, doing a whole lot of homaging of pirate films from back in the day to now kind of thing. Very much taking the piss out of it all as well. Got that amazing, not just Taika sense of humour, but the New Zealand sense of humour is very strong in this, even though there really aren't that many New Zealanders compared to people from other places within the cast, a lot of people from the UK and America in there as well. Some really nice little cameos in episodes where you think, almost like we were talking about The Mandalorian just before, where you think, I really hope that they come back and talk to you again because you were a ridiculous character and I feel like the storyline could loop back around. I'm up to episode 6, so I've got a couple more to go, so I don't know.
Is it 8 all up?
10 episodes all up. Yeah, but 8 are available as of when we're recording. So Rhys Darby plays Steed Bonnet, who is a new pirate captain. He's kind of had a sea change.
He's based on a real guy, isn't he?
Which I could not believe until I started looking it up. I'm like, this was a real character? This is amazing. This is so funny. He calls himself the Gentleman Pirate and he's going to kill people with kindness. He's so great. And I don't think I will say, I won't spoil, but I'll say there is Blackbeard. I'm not sure if you see in the trailer who Blackbeard is. I can't remember.
It's Taika.
Okay, good. So you know. But the whole lead up is honestly like 3 episodes long and you're like, I know who it is. Stop. Like there's all this sort of from the camera shoots just his back and or like an arm or, you know, and you're just like, I know who it is. What is this lead up? What is the point? It's so funny. And of course, you've got the wonderful Hodor from Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Christian, is it Nyrin? Nyrin, I think is how you pronounce his last name. He's amazing. You've got Joel Fry from The Witcher who plays a very different character, and I really like his character, and there are a couple of others in there as well that
I have not ever seen anything that Joel Fry has appeared in that he hasn't made better.
Yeah, he's one of those actors, right?
He is.
And you see him and you're like, oh. Yeah, and he's different in all of the things as well, which I think is, mm-hmm. is amazing. I'm watching this, I think the episode's maybe half an hour tops, maybe 33 minutes tops, but I'm watching this whilst I'm making dinner or having lunch, you know, that kind of thing where, because you don't need to focus 100% on it, but you just want it to wash over you. At least that's me, like the comedy, just let the comedy wash over me. And it's just so dumb. I love it. I hope they have another season already. Like this one, I'm not even finished with this one. I already won another season.
Sure.
I'm looking forward to hearing what you think of it because I know you will like it.
I hear it's very good vibes.
Very good vibes. I'm not going to tell you all of the people who are in it because it's nice. It's nice when they appear. Yeah.
Hey, that's actually a really nice segue for me because last week the digital version of Spider-Man No Way Out.
Oh, yeah.
No, sorry, No Way Home.
Yeah, yeah.
Came out for digital purchase and stuff like that. So I picked that up and I've watched it twice again already. But I wanted to give a shout out to the special features because quite often special features for a film – if you've watched marketing material for the film before it's come out or just after it's come out, you've already seen all that content. Mm. But because of the nature of No Way Home, there's so much stuff that they still now don't want to put out publicly for people who haven't seen it, that there's genuinely rewarding and interesting stuff to see of how certain moments came together and how certain people were brought back into the fold and yeah, just stuff that wasn't in the, you know, normally these films, you've had the main stars all out talking about it for months beforehand. Yeah. You've heard all the stories, you know, everything about when on set, all this sort of stuff. This feels like you're being let in on the secret.
Mm.
And so, yeah, if you enjoyed the film, it's a very happy and, you know, woo, we did it, guys, type vibe through there of a bunch of people that had to keep the secret for a year and a half.
Yeah, some who were not very good at it, I've heard.
No. And it is interesting to see how some people are very committed to the game and some people, Alfred Molina, couldn't give a shit.
Oh, that's so good. So how many times now have you watched this film?
Four. Two at the cinema, two at home.
Yeah, that's all right. That's quite conservative.
It's a 3-hour movie, so I've spent half a day of my life watching that, and I ain't done.
Are you like thinking I ain't done as in maybe later today or, you know, by the end of the week that'll be fine?
By the end of the week. There's one scene in there that elicits a similar emotion from me as a particular moment in Avengers Endgame, where someone picks something up. It's not the same, but it's a moment of something coalescing and there's wahoo is shouted out. And I don't know why, but that kicks me in the happiness feels every time.
That's good. That's good. It's got to give you some joy. Like otherwise.
Yeah.
What's the point?
Well, that's it. And it's nice to do a bit of rewatch. I'll say as well, Wednesday, I managed to sneak out at night and went and saw the Batman again with my buddies. That was nice. I didn't need to see it again.
But you have.
Not saying it's bad and stuff, but it didn't, you know, it's not a fun movie.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Unlike Spider-Man, yeah, totally. And
that's kind of the difference in them.
Was there anything really in there that you picked up on the second watch, or no?
A bit of the detective work of stuff that because you understand its relevance from later in the plot when things happen earlier, you're like, oh, okay, there's some more connective tissue here that I didn't pick up the first time. So yeah, it was cool.
That's good. I'm just going to quickly touch on the series Snowpiercer. There's for a train that's supposed to have the last of civilization, there's a lot of death this season. Aren't we supposed to be keeping humanity going? Isn't that the point?
In the herd.
But a couple of weeks ago, there was an interesting episode where it was a sort of a fever dream episode where someone was trying to get out of their unconscious state back into the world of reality, but didn't really want to at the same time. And I really liked the way that it was filmed. So, you know, as you can imagine, Snowpiercer, if you've seen the movie, you know, the colors, it's all dark and you've got the grays, the whites, obviously from the snow, those dull, dark blues. This episode, still a train, but it had that kind of South America, even like the Cuban kind of color. So coming in from the windows was that warm yellow light of sun.
Sure.
There were more plants around in the background. People were wearing more tan, earthy colors and playing very different characters to what they play usually. So it's the same characters playing completely different roles. It was a nice little departure from what you see every single episode, and it's hard for a show like that to not provide the exact same thing every time because you're stuck on a train, right? So that I thought that was a really nice way to move it out and back in again, you know, and it was not a we'll come up with it, there'll be more with this later. It was a one and done. But as we're moving closer towards the end of the season, there's been more mentions of a character who we have not seen for a long time, and they have been planting this seed throughout this whole entire season, so much so that two episodes have both ended with, well, I think it's pretty conclusive. And then you're like, well, you said that you said that last week as well. So what are we doing? Can we just have the reveal? It's kind of like Taika Waititi, you know, Taika playing Blackbeard. You're like, just do it.
Please just do it.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm hoping they pull the Band-Aid off this week. I'll be watching it on the weekend, but there's the, much like the movie, some of those characters are odd.
Yeah, sure.
They're not Tilda Swinton odd. Well, there is one a bit Tilda Swinton-y, but they're just odd. Good show to watch, though.
Nice. Well, I want to talk about something that I didn't watch on a screen at all. I went out again last week on Thursday at the Australian Museum in Sydney. They currently have a Jurassic World Lego exhibition built and curated by the brick man, Ryan McNaught, who is the host of, he's the judge on Australia's Lego Masters.
Amazing.
Which is awesome. It's a touring exhibition. It was in Melbourne last year.
Oh, okay.
It's in Sydney at the moment. It's going to Brisbane later. Basically, anytime it moves and goes to a new location, he adds an extra dinosaur. And it's, you know, he runs a team. He has a large shop, not shop, but like a factory set up down in Melbourne, mm-hmm. and does large scale builds for all sorts of stores and things around. But yeah, the exhibition at the moment has two of the largest Lego creations in the Southern Hemisphere.
Well, I mean, dinosaurs. Yeah.
There's a Brachiosaurus made from Duplo blocks.
Oh, that's fun. That's original.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
It weighs 1.6 tons.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. So I went on Thursday night, and this was a birthday present from my wonderful women, but it was a behind-the-scenes tour and Q&A with him and then a building masterclass afterwards. And it was fascinating to learn all this stuff about the build and stuff. He told us about steel structures that are hidden underneath.
If things are over a ton, you can't expect,
plastic bricks. They have a certain tensile point where things will start to creak and crack. So there's that sort of structure, and they use a particular type of glue
mm-hmm.
that's also an ingredient in a lot of weird drugs.
Oh, really?
So they have to have special permits to get it, and it needs to be locked in the safe at all times.
How
and this
bizarre.
Sort of stuff.
That's wow.
And using concrete counterlevers and stuff hidden behind curtains so things look like they're jumping, but actually there's a beam through a tail that's holding them behind a curtain.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
Really, really clever stuff. We learn all sorts of stuff about Lego Masters. They have 16 camera crews.
Is that so that really does indicate that when they say you've got 12 hours to build this, they are spending 12 hours nonstop building it?
Well, no. Here's the thing. If it's a 12-hour build, that's going to be filmed over 3 days.
Oh, okay.
Because like,
that
he was very open about this stuff. That first part where they walk through the roller door, mm-hmm. they filmed that about 8 times so that everyone's got the best reaction for their close-up, this sort of stuff. That first little spiel can take up to half a day, getting everyone excited and stuff. And then they intentionally cut up the films so that people aren't exhausted, because most of the contestants on the show aren't media trained. They've never done anything like this. It is exhausting to be put on the spot creatively like that.
I find it reassuring to hear this, though.
They take out any part where someone's struggling.
Cool.
Because that's not in the nature is about positivity. Any challenge they're doing on the show, they've road tested at his company at least 5 times to make sure that it's achievable, because they don't want to set people up to fail. They want to give people the opportunity to succeed. All this sort of stuff was really fun to learn. And their production crew is the same as the block. So the guys, everyone involved with the block, they do 6 months on the block, 6 months on Lego Masters.
I know which one I'd be interested in.
I know, but that explains why Scotty Cam was so comfortable and relaxed with everyone when he was on the Christmas special.
Okay. Yeah, right. So how many were in this behind-the-scenes masterclass?
Look, there's probably about 20, maybe just over. And at the tail end of it, we got carved up into 3 groups. Mm-hmm. And it was just real short scale, mainly because we'd asked too many questions.
Yeah, okay.
But each group had a big bucket of Lego tipped out on the table. And he literally goes, all right, I want you to build the tallest tower you can as a group. You have 10 minutes, go. Mm. And there was no think, no plan, nothing. My brain froze and I had to step back and watch what everyone else was doing. And then, because I'm a strategist for work, I can't just jump in and go. I need to plan. Mm. But seeing what everyone else is doing, I coordinated. And got everyone working together.
Nice.
So it was about learning what sort of archetype personality you have in this sort of stuff. And it really did surprise me. Of like, okay, yeah, this works really well. Then there was another competition of who could do the tallest tower. So it was tallest tower first, and then who could create the longest bridge. And we won the tallest tower and the longest bridge. Ours was pretty long. Ours was really a rope. Whereas another group had done a fucking bridge
and
there were
bridge,
towers
yeah.
at the end
yeah,
and stuff. Yeah. So they won on aesthetics and
yeah,
stuff. But
yeah.
Great fun. Great fun. What a night out.
And nice
every
bloke.
Bit as lovely as I hoped. Every bit as lovely as I hoped. Very open and encouraging and this sort of stuff. And he said the most difficult part of the show, it's very clear if you've watched the end of the episodes when he has to send someone home and he cries. He's like, that's really genuine because – it is counter to everything of what his love of Lego is about, in that Lego is art, it's subjective, and he can't believe that he has to tell people that they didn't do as good a job as someone else.
Yeah.
So awesome night out. He is doing another 2 of these, one each month while the event is on at the Australian Museum, and then I imagine wherever it tours on to past there, he'll do more of them. If you're inclined to get along, if this sounds interesting, I really, really recommend it. Not cheap. I didn't pay for it. It was for my birthday. But almost all the other people that were there were like, expensive night out, but worth it.
Yeah. So, it's an experience.
Thanks, everyone, for my birthday. Exactly. And they gave us wine and we hung out in a fancy members lounge underneath the museum.
Whoa, that is cool. Okay, that whole night sounds like an amazing experience.
I didn't even mention the funniest part. When I arrived there, I got there slightly early, and a friend of the show Andrew DJ Levins was DJing in the foyer for dinosaurs.
For Lego dinosaurs. That's amazing. Yeah. Were you able to chat with him?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He wasn't being swarmed and swamped with requests or anything. No one was bothering him.
Play the Spice Girls.
Do the dinosaur stump. No, it was very chill.
A wise man once leant over and whispered in my ear, "We tweet, therefore we are." Profound and a little creepy. Follow the Watchers on Twitter at TheWatchersPod1. They aren't creepy, I promise.
We both watched Walking Dead. It happened.
It was
a murder mystery.
It was.
Last week was political. This week's a murder mystery. What's next week going to be? Post-apocalyptic?
Now, this new bloke, this ex-CIA bloke, was in, well, I've only seen one season of it, but he was in the first season of Ozark. He played an FBI agent. Like I said, I've only seen the first season, so I don't know if he goes crazy, but not as crazy as he was in this, I can tell you that.
He was a very capable man with a certain set of skills.
And Mr.
I got real Liam Neeson vibes off him.
And you got
Once the switch happened.
Yeah, once the switch happened, yeah. But you could kind of tell he was a bit dodgy, right? But it took me until last week to realize. So I can't remember the character's name, but you know the guy that he was speaking to in the flashback, and we've seen him before.
Lance.
It took me until last week to realize where I know Lance from. For those playing at home, Lance played in one episode the infamous, the elusive Serge, from Absolutely Fabulous. He played Jennifer Saunders' son in one episode where they go to New York. One episode.
There you go.
It's like, where have I seen this guy from before? And I can tell you what, he's hardly aged. He's doing pretty well.
Well done. Well done to him.
I was watching this with your comments, your experience comments from the comics, and I was like, oh, Aaron is, yes, there's a path that Aaron's going down, and it sounds like it was Rick's at the end of the
Aaron
comics.
Aaron has bought in too much.
Yeah.
The real shame.
Yeah, but we're starting to see now where and why Negan and not Carol, Maggie will wander off and do their own thing. It's making more sense now.
Yeah, things are starting to click into place a bit more.
I think that's all we need to say about The Walking Dead. It continues. We're still watching it.
It continues on.
I think it's now time for a quiz. Yes?
Yes, let's do it.
So this is along the lines of one that I saw on BuzzFeed. It wasn't a quiz. It was kind of like, you will never guess that these...
Was it a listicle or just clickbait? Clickbaity.
No, it was kind of interesting. Like, I enjoyed the list, even though I was validated in a lot of them. But it was, you'll never guess that these actors are not American, right? But it would say where they're from. So I've picked a few actors that I thought, like, you're going to know that they're not American, but I want to know where they're from, particularly if they're Australian. I want to know which state. So we're going to go with KJ Apa, who plays the main character in Riverdale, Archie. What country is he from? I don't know why I knew this one.
Canada?
He's a Kiwi, bro.
Oh, shut.
That's good. Very, very good. What about Charlie Cox?
Is he British?
Yeah. Born in London.
Because his accent on Broadwalk Empire was impeccably Irish.
Yeah, right. Trying to think, there was another actor that I saw recently and I assumed that he was Irish. Maybe it was on Snowpiercer. and they're not. I can't think of who it was. No, it wasn't Charlie. Robert Sheenan from Umbrella Academy.
Oh, he's proper Irish.
He's proper Irish. That's right. Yeah, I've heard him speak, so that was not a surprise for me.
He was using his accent in Misfits.
And that's, since I've seen that.
When I think of him, I think of him more in Misfits. And I want to watch that show.
Yeah, I want to watch that again. That's been a long time for me. What about Damian Lewis? Now, this bloke is in a lot of stuff, particularly the first couple of seasons of Homeland, where he played a returning American soldier. I didn't know this one.
Is he English?
He's English, yeah. I've not heard him speak in anything but an American accent.
Sure. I think I remember him being in some Doctor Who or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
As a very small part.
Yeah, yeah, before he met up with Claire Danes and started doing things. Now, you know which country Margot Robbie is from, but which state?
Is she from the Goldie?
Yeah.
Yeah,
she is, right? She's like Queensland. That's right. You could tell.
I like that you look at her and you're like, yeah, you're Goldie, but you look at the Hemsworth and you're like, yeah, you're Byron.
It's so different, right? It's such a different vibe.
An hour's drive makes all the difference,
right? Have you seen I think it's on Amazon maybe, but there's a new show, right, reality show that I've seen them advertise about.
Byron Bays.
And just the name just makes me not want to watch it.
Oh, it's not for us.
No, it's not for us, but Bays.
Mick might watch it.
Steph will watch it.
All right, well, let's get Steph to come and let us know what she thought of Byron Bays.
Yeah.
That's she'll her homework. Hate it. You tell her.
She'll hate it, but she'll watch it. You don't watch those reality shows to enjoy. You watch to hate watch. Judge. Yeah, yeah, it's judgy stuff.
Yeah.
We're up to the last one. Yvonne
Stravinsky.
Yep. The lady from
Chuck.
And also Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, yeah.
And she was in that movie with Chris Pratt where like Tomorrow. The aliens came. Yeah, she played the adult version of his daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Tomorrow. Yes. Now, she's Australian.
Yeah, so I just want to state.
Is she from Perth, Western Australia?
That's a good guess. It's not Perth.
Maybe South one more. Australia.
No, she's from New South Wales.
Oh,
I thought your pondering was, oh, is she a New South Welshman or does she look more like she's Victorian? But then you went with Western Australia. I was like, oh, that's a good guess.
I was going west or south.
So she's from, I'd never heard of it, but a small town somewhere in New South Wales. And I was like, she is one of those Aussie actors that has kept her accent and, mate, I bloody love it. She doesn't speak like that. She just speaks like us.
Good on her.
Yeah.
Good on her, Yvonne.
She doesn't play tennis. She's an actress.
No, but every time I see the name Yvonne written out, my brain says, pronounce that Yvonne, right?
Yeah, I want to say it like that, but you have to be very careful. Well done you for remembering how to pronounce her last name.
Thanks.
Thank you. And on that note, I'm going to thank you again. Thank you very much, Tom.
Wahoo!